Oh, that was so bad. Hello. How many of you have heard Swerver before? Raise your hand if you've heard a version of it. Or how many have not heard the Swerver teaching? Okay, more than half. Okay. Well, you're not going to hear Swerver teaching today. It's online. You can listen to the teaching I gave the last 2 years. You can just go online, faithwalkersonline.net. You can listen to it there. You can listen to it today. Just go online and listen to it. What do we want to do today? I'll give you an overview just to kind of help you understand what we're going to talk about and what we're not going to talk about when it comes to Swerver. And then I'm going to have Steele Crosswhite and his lovely wife, Kim, share. My wife is actually here this year. And we're going to share and leave. We want to leave about half the time for questions and answers because there's always questions. This is kind of a hot topic, and I understand that. After teaching it for a number of years now, the whole idea of Christian dating is misunderstood sometimes, and I know it can be a hot button. I know as I've taught this, I've physically seen people get madder and madder and madder to the point where they wouldn't even look at me. They would probably punch me, and I'm not kidding you, if they could. They react to it. It's an emotional thing, and I understand that, and I've gotten good feedback from around the country. Steele and I, that's probably the most feedback we get on anything that I teach, any conferences we do or albums we put out. People come up and say either, well, they don't tell me they didn't like it. They tell me they liked it. The people that didn't like it will never talk to me probably. I've had good questions on emails. People have emailed me some good questions, have good interactions. This is an important topic. I'm just going to give you an overview, okay? I'm not going to do the whole teaching because I want Steele and Kim to share their story. Make sure they have time this year. Swerver is simply, if you don't know what Swerver is, if you've read Josh Harris's book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye, I read that, and it really resonated with what I believed. It was kind of retelling of my convictions on this area of classic dating, I call it. That's how I define it. And a swerver is, I wish I had a clip of one, but you've seen the movies where somebody has a shopping cart that has kind of a bad, you know, wheel that's kind of goes this way, and you want to go this way, always is fighting you to want to go this way. You've had a cart like that, right? I think classic Christian dating can be a swerver. That's why we call it swerver. Meaning, I think it can take you somewhere where you don't really want to go or should go. And if you're really unlucky, it could crash your life into a big thing of something that comes crashing down. I think classic dating for a Christian can be a swerver. Now, having said that, listen to me very carefully and read my lips. It's not wrong. Well, let me unwind that lip thing, okay? It's not sin to date. Okay? You're not going to go away from here saying, Bill said it was a sin to date. I didn't say that. Matter of fact, I'm telling you now, it's not a sin to date. Any more than it's a sin to eat McDonald's every day. It's not a sin. Bible doesn't say you shouldn't eat McDonald's every day. What I'm saying when it comes to Swerver, and you have to listen to the tape, is that I think that there's a better way to establish guy-girl relationships than the classic dating model, meaning the model that most of us have grown up with, Christian or non-Christian, being told this is the way you hook up and get married. You are an item. You find somebody that you're attracted to. You get with them. You isolate yourself. You just kind of go off and be your own thing to get to know each other, find out if you're compatible, and you are a guy-girl thing by yourselves, isolated, separated from the rest of the pack until you break up or you get married. I would say I think there's a better way, especially for Christians. It's not wrong, necessarily. It can lead to something wrong. And most oftentimes, in my opinion, does lead to something wrong. But there's a better way. And that's my message with Swerver, is that I think there's a better way. And that you should know about it. And it works. It worked for me and my wife. It worked for Steele and Kim. It's working for a lot of people. And I think, biblically, it lines up more with what God would have. I think it's more of God's heart. I would say that for sure. Matter of fact, as many times as I've taught this, I've never had anyone come back to me, even the people that don't like it, especially the people that don't like it. I always challenge people, if you've got a better way, and you can defend it scripturally as far as how you are hooking up with this girl or this guy, and you could defend it scripturally, then show me. Because I use about 50 verses in my teaching that defends this model, which we call, or Josh Whitney, actually, I think, coined this phrase, DWAPing, dating with a purpose. I could defend it. I could defend purity. Can you defend what you're doing with your boyfriend or girlfriend? If I asked you to do what you do with your boyfriend and your girlfriend up here right now, would you do it? When you're alone at night or sit in the back seat of your car, would you do it right here? And if not, why not? Why not? If you're not married to them, then maybe you shouldn't be doing it. If you won't do it in front of us, then why should you do it with them? I think there's a better way. I think there's a better way. Here's what I consider kind of the definition of a swerver. Actually, let me go to definition of classic dating. Just real quick. Again, I'm just going to highlight some of these things. In my mind, classic dating is this. And this is what I did since I was in the fifth grade with my first girlfriend, Tracy Shipler. My wife's heard me talk about Tracy Shipler, my first girlfriend, fifth grade. Classic dating, this is what I'm talking about when I talk about classic dating, is defined by separation, tendency to become excessively exclusive at the expense of other key relationships. I mean, your friends are going, ah, when they look at you and that person going, they're so, we don't even hang around anymore because they're all over there with that person. It's defined by separation. It's defined by isolation as well. It's typically pursued with little or no input or accountability from other mature Christian leaders. That's defining what I say is probably not the best way to date. This classic dating. It's defined by deception, oftentimes. Little or no thought or communication in regard to vision, plan, purpose, or long-term commitment in the relationship. Little thought given to that. It's just, hey, we kind of like each other. We want to kind of hang out. There's no commitment. Oh, but I love her and I love him, but there's no commitment. Okay, how many of you have been in a small group where somebody had one of these classic dating relationships and everything's great when they're happy, but when they break up, what happens to your small group atmosphere? It ruins it because there was never any commitment to begin with. Okay, I think it's often marked by corruption, this relationship, this dating relationship, often results in lowering a basic biblical standards. It often lowers the standard. Very rarely does it raise the bar in that relationship, does it? Rarely. I've been there. I'm not stupid. I know what happens. And it doesn't raise the bar on the moral standards that we read about in the Bible that I can defend. I can give you 50 verses on being morally pure. Oftentimes, in the classic model, what I'm talking about, and you may not be involved in the classic dating model, but I'm talking about the classic dating model. Oftentimes the standards are lowered. I mean, you'll be involved in sexual activity that you probably shouldn't be. And you justify it or you're blinded to it because of your passion or your love for that person. Yet there's no commitment. You haven't got counsel from anybody. And if anybody like me tells you you shouldn't do it, you get upset. That should be a red light to you. Because I have verses that I can back up what I'm saying. A lot of them. And I've got wisdom from experience, not just me, but your parents would most likely agree with me. The pastors that I run with would agree with me. This isn't my idea. That's the point. I believe God has a model that is more biblical and more pure than the classic dating model. Okay? I think there's a better way. Real simply, I think that God tells us not to be partial when it comes to a guy-girl relationship, okay? Not to be partial, not to be selfish. We've got the verses. I've got a handout that I can give you that has all the verses. God's standards are pretty high. God calls us to be absolutely pure, to show no favoritism, to do nothing out of selfish ambition, to have not even a hint of sexual immorality. That's a pretty high bar, wouldn't you agree? So if what you're doing is down here, how can you justify it? Well, I say you probably can't. You need to be at least this high. And here's just one quick illustration. The Bible says that I'm to treat the women and men, you are to treat your fellow Christian women as sisters with what? Absolutely. The women knew that. Guys, do you hear them? They knew that verse. The women said, with absolute purity. Men, you are to treat these women that are not your spouse with absolute purity. And I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I have a sister who's very attractive. And the Bible says, treat them as sisters with absolute purity. So I think of my sister. How do I treat my sister? Well, I just want to tell you this. I'll tell you what I don't do with my sister. I don't stick my tongue in her mouth. And it makes me want to gag. Why? Because she's ugly? No, she's beautiful. Now, guys, if you're sticking your tongue in your girlfriend's mouth, I want to ask you, how are you obeying this verse? How are you obeying that verse? With absolute purity. Now, you might be laughing, but I want to ask you, can you defend that, what you do with that person? That's the Bible standard. And don't give me anything else, please. If you've got biblical verses, if you've got reasons why you're doing what you're doing, great. And if you're pure in your relationship and you're dating, praise God. Remain pure. But that's a hard thing to do, isn't it? If you're hanging around all the time together, especially at night, it's hard to be pure. I think there's a better way. There's a better way. I think, and I'm going to just summarize with this so Steele can come up, kind of share his story and then leave time for questions, is that I think as Christians, we can hang around. You can learn everything you want to learn about a potential spouse by living the Christian life together communally, not living together, but in your church, in your small group environment, in your youth group, in whatever. You can learn everything you need to know about that person in an environment where you are together serving God to reach the world for Christ. I think you can learn all you need to learn. Oh, but I don't know if I'm going to be compatible. I was making out with my wife this afternoon. We were sitting on a chair kissing. And I looked at her and said, how did we even know we were compatible? We never dated. You know what? You are compatible. You're a man. She's a woman. Don't go there. You're compatible. Did I just gross you out because I said I made out with my wife? She's awesome. But we didn't date. We had one date with some unsaved friends of mine that I was trying to reach. Before we were married, I got a lot of counsel and said, I need to take a date, go out to dinner with my friends, try to win them. And John Meyer said, you can take Mary. She was living with John Meyer and Carol at the time, so I took Mary. We had one date, but it wasn't so that I could find out if she is one for me. I learned everything I needed to know about my wife in group settings. I saw how she interacted with people. And here's the deal, guys. You don't want a woman that just looks good. Okay? You want a beautiful woman. And I want to tell you something. The beautiful women are the ones that care about the unlovely. Those are the most attractive women. And you should learn that now before you get married, because looks aren't everything. If you've got a woman that doesn't care about the unlovely, the people that nobody pays attention to, if you see a woman that is paying attention to that person, guys, take notice. That's the kind of person you want to marry. Not the one that just looks good, but the one that loves the unlovely, that has Christ in mind and not just looking good so that she'll be attractive. Women, you should take note of that too. That is the most attractive thing to men. We see women pursuing God with all their heart and loving the unlovely, hanging around women and discipling women. That is attractive, women. Guys, that's what you need to look for. I think there's a better way. You can hang around in groups. Get counsel. Get lots of advice. If you're attracted to somebody, go seek advice. Talk to your small group leader. Talk to your pastor. Say, this is what I'm struggling with. I think I'm kind of falling in love with this person. What should I do? Get advice. A wise man gets counsel. And then follow that advice. Be accountable. I was always accountable with my roommates, especially when I started finding myself falling in love with my then just girl in my small group, Mary. I was falling in love with her. I had to get accountability. Every time I would initiate unduly in my mind, I needed to be accountable to John Meyer and to my roommates that I wouldn't. My flesh just wanted to keep doing stuff with her, separate myself. That's what our flesh wants. But I knew that wasn't what God called me to do at that time, to separate myself just with her. And I didn't do it. And God still put us together. Isn't that amazing? Isn't God amazing? It's kind of like what Brent was sharing today, I think it was Brent, about, or was it John? He talked about Jeremiah. I believe you're a God of the universe, but I don't think you know how to help me spend this $5 I got. I believe you're God of the universe and you saved my soul from death, but you haven't a clue on how to bring that girl to me. I can trust you for my eternal salvation, but I can't trust you for a wife. I've got to go after that one and get it myself, God. I've got to take the initiative. I've got to be partial. I've got to show favoritism. I've got to make them like me. You've got to make this an issue of faith. That God is big enough to bring you not just a wife, not just a husband, but the wife or the husband for you. You don't want just a wife. I do way too much counseling to say you just want a wife. That'll make you happy. That ain't going to make you happy. It's going to make you miserable if it's the wrong wife. Sit in my office and hear the stories about these people that say they love each other, and 3 years later they're at each other's throat. You don't want that. You want the wife. You want the husband. Don't settle for anything less. In this area, don't settle. Okay? There's a better way. I'm going to have Steele come up, start his story. I'm going to give you this mic, so give a round of applause for Steele. Hi, Christians. Hi, Christians. Hi. Hopefully I don't trip on this cord here. Well, my name's Steele Crosswhite, and I look forward to making out with my wife later today. Sorry, I didn't mean to embarrass you. Oh. Hey, so a lot of you guys, I think there's a little bit of a disadvantage. How many of you guys have heard the Swerver talk before? Okay, so there's not a lot, and this is your first time, right? Raise your hand if it's your first time hearing this talk. Okay, so guys, go and hear the full talk on the internet, because it's important that you do it in order to get the gist, because I do want to leave questions for the few of you, or a few guys, if something resonated in your heart today, to answer some of the questions this afternoon, because I think it's important. But the basis is this, just in case Bill didn't hit on it totally, he did, but the basis is we're Christians. We love Jesus. We want the right spouse. We want the right husband. We want the right wife. And I think typically what happens, especially since we're surrounded in a culture, is we see a gal or a guy that we're attracted to and we go, you know what? They love Jesus. They're at Faith Walkers. Well, I'm at Faith Walkers. I'll bet you that's my future wife or husband. Or something like that. They showed up to church. That's my wife. She loves Jesus. I saw her raise her hands during worship and pop, we're dating them. Okay? Because we see that all over the place. And again, I want to just echo what Bill said. You know, it's not necessarily wrong to date. And in fact, guys, listen. Because I could go on and on and on. And if you guys have questions, my email is steele@experiencetherock.com. Please email me with any questions that you have. But we always see, you know, it's not wrong to date. I don't want to necessarily say that. But what we see is these people, we go, I'm attracted to you, you're attracted to me, and the next thing you know, you're dating and you're not even thinking about it. And you're giving each other your hearts. Gals are giving these hearts to these guys that they barely know. Guys are giving these hearts, their hearts to these girls that they barely know, because we happen to go to church together. We happen to like the same things. But the principle of Swerver, okay, it's not legalism, it's not a law. But the principle is this. You're right here, okay? For the sake of my story, the gal's right here, and God's right here. And instead of looking at the world and we go, you know what, I'm attracted to this girl over here, and this girl's attracted to the guy, and you go, pah! You date, you look at God. And as you're looking at God, you're moving closer and closer together. That's the principle of Swerver. Yes? Can you not hear me in the background? No. Okay, so what I just said is the principle of Swerver is this. Is that you're right here, the guy's here, the gal's here. And typically what we see in the world is we look at one another and we just kind of stop, get together as soon as we can. But what we should be doing, and I think what Bill is saying and what I would be saying, and email me and I'll talk to you all about it more, is that God's up here. And as you guys are looking at God, you will come together.
That's the principle of Swerver. And along that line, you're not just dating because you can date. You're not showing favoritism, and you're not getting together. If you happen to like this girl, you go, you know what? I'm going to go over here and do anything I can to manipulate the situation so that girl might think that I'm something special. Or if you're a gal, you go, I'm not going to dress up as sexy as I can dress up and really try to win this guy's heart. Because then what happens is you kind of just circumvent God altogether. And you're going, I'm looking at him, and I'm looking at her, and you're not really looking at God. It's an issue of faith. But you look at it and you go, you know what? If you're attracted to a gal, or you're attracted to a guy, you stand back long enough, and you pray, and you give God your heart, and you say, God, I'm going to follow you, I'm going to watch my favoritism, I'm going to hang out in groups, I'm not going to manipulate the situation, I'm not going to date just because I can date, because I don't want to win her the wrong way. I want the right wife. I want the right husband. And so I'm going to follow you. And God, if these feelings are not from you, you take them away. Because if they're not from you, then it won't be good. It won't be the right wife. It won't be the right husband. God, I'm attracted to this gal. Take these feelings away from me. In the world, we rush it so fast, and the heartbreak goes on and on and on. And you guys probably all experienced it, which is probably why you're sitting in this room. Let me tell you something. It is the hardest thing in the world to be single. I was once single. I haven't been married that long. And I know how hard it seems to be pure, especially if you're a man. God bless you that you're in this room. Because it is hard to hold the line. It is hard to be a man or woman of purity. And it is hard to be single. But let me tell you something. If you are putting God first, and you're not rushing your dating relationships, He will honor your faith. And I don't always know what that looks like. For me, I'll tell you my quick story. Bill talked about Swerver, and when I first heard it, I threw it out the window. I was so mad, because I was kind of a cool guy. I played in bands and stuff like that, and you know what? I liked going on dates. I liked wooing the girls. I thought I was something pretty cool. And my sister, God bless her, she gave me, when God started winning my heart, you know, I my sister and my future wife and Bill, God just used these people to get inside my life, and the more and more I started falling in love with God, the more and more I was hanging out with them. And my sister Paige, she gave me this disc of something called Godly Relationships. And the whole principle was, you know what? If you care about somebody, if you're attracted to somebody, don't hang around them. What kind of crazy church are you going to, Paige? Don't hang around. What are you talking about? I took it out of my CD player. I threw it out my window. I got closer and closer to God over time. And all these verses you guys should read about and get on the internet and listen to this sermon, because it all talks about don't show favoritism. Don't manipulate. Trust God. And I was like, Bill Young is crazy. Man, because I was single, you know, I was like, I didn't have Kim then. I was like, yeah, well, Bill's got a wife, but I don't. But God started winning my heart, and my story goes a little bit like this. I finally was wrestling with God, and I finally got to the place where I was like, Jesus. And in that whole line, you know, God just really had changed my life. Tons of weird addictions and just crazy. I flipped for Jesus, and I finally said, God, I know this seems crazy, but I'm going to go with it. I'm going to trust you for my wife. I'm going to trust you, God. I'm going to quit trying to go out there and just put my foot in all these different pools. I'm going to say, God, if I get attracted to a girl, I'm going to wait until you make it clear to me that she's the one. So, I'm not kidding. Like that same week, I'd been hanging out with Kim and Paige, my sister Paige, and a couple other gals, and we'd been going out after church and stuff and hanging out. And one particular evening, I was getting ready and I was putting on these pair of pants, you know, and I was looking at myself in the mirror, and in my mind I thought, I wonder what Kim's going to think of these pants. And I was like, oh no! I'm attracted to Kim, this can't be right! I just know, God, I just made that covenant with you that I'm not going to date anybody. What does this mean? My heart was pittering pat, and I saw Kim that night, and I was like, where am I supposed to sit? Long story short, That was the hardest. I waited, I think, 22 months for my wife. I was getting counsel from Bill. This whole time, I wasn't running after Kim, showing her favoritism. I never asked her on a date. I never called her on the phone. It was almost like I was a frick-frackin' Amish person. I was like, you know, I just, when I saw her, I almost retreated to the other side of the room, okay? Almost legalistically. But I was like, God, if she's the one, I don't want to break her heart first. Because if she's not the one, I don't want to break her heart. I don't want to rush this before its proper time. If she's the one, God, I'm going to trust you for it. And for 22 months, I would walk around and I would pray and I would get counsel from Bill. And he would go, Steele, are you at a 7? Are you at a 7? On a level from 1 to 10, if 1's the lowest in your feelings and emotion towards Kim and 10's the worst, where are you at a 7? I'm at about a 4. We'd meet, are you at a 5? Are you at a 6? I'm at about an 8, Bill. I'm going crazy. And I'd walk around and I'd pray and I'd give God my sexuality and I'd give Him my manhood and I'd give Him my fears. And some days I'd go, God, thank you that you are Lord, that you are good. Thank you, God, that you are in charge of my future wife one day. And other days I'd be like, God, I am so sick and tired of waiting. Finally the day came. And I'm going to make this fast. But finally the day came where Kim and I, we'd never really hung out that much. We sang together, but we'd never gone on any dates. And I finally picked up the phone and I called her to see if she wanted to get coffee with me. And it was really awkward conversation. Because we didn't really ever hang out. And she got in the car and I was like, hi. She's like, hi. All right, we got the highs out of the way. I like to walk and talk. I communicate best when I'm walking around. I like to move and stuff. And so I'm thinking, I'm going to go on a walk with Kim, and I'm just going to tell her. Because she didn't know I was attracted to her. Okay, so I was just going to tell her, you know, that I was attracted to her. I was thinking, you know what, if I can grab some coffee and just go on a walk, that would be best. And so I look at her and I go, well, I got some things I want to talk to you about. I thought maybe we'd get some coffee. We go on a walk. And she goes, how about we drive? I'm like, drive? Well, if it's bad news, then she's stuck in my car. She can't run away. So anyway, so we get some coffee and we're driving up in the mountains and you know, it's this bad conversation. You know, it's like, well, the trees are really green today and the sky's blue. And so finally, you know, I was like just kind of coming out of my skin and I'm driving. I couldn't believe I said it. I looked at her. I said, well, it's obvious we're not going to find any place to walk around. So I'm just going to pull over. And I pull over and I'm looking at her and I said, Kim, I just want to let you know that for the last 2 years, I've been getting counsel, and I want to date you with the purpose of getting married to you one day. She stopped and she was quiet, and I was like, oh, no. But I moved her sunglasses because she had these big sunglasses on, and she was crying. She said, Steele, I've been getting counsel. If you can't hear me, Kim said, Steele, I've been getting counsel from girls for 16 months about you. 18 months about you, and I had been getting counsel from Bill for like 22 months. And a year to that date, from that day, we were married. And I won. I have the most beautiful, amazing wife, handpicked for me. God made her for me. I waited for her. And you know what's so great is in that entire time, I know I could look at her straight in the eye to this day and go, I never intentionally manipulated a situation. I never stepped out of line with purity. I did not unguard your heart. So that in our marriage today, on the worst days, we can go, we waited. You are made for me. You are picked for me. And I am for you. It's beautiful. Kim. Hey, hon, let me give you this. If I can get it off.
Can you hear me?
It's for the recording.
Oh, so there's no microphone. Oh. So I just have to talk loud?
Yep.
There's no. Okay. I was wondering why I couldn't hear you. Okay. My name's Kim Crosswhite, and it's kind of funny for me to tell this story, I think, because it's... In so many ways, I feel like it's just God's story. I feel like I was just along for the ride. Like, it's kind of, when I look back at, when I'm in a hard time in my own life, even now, I can look back at this time of me waiting for steel as God's faithfulness. Even if I'm dealing with something that's really hard in my life and it's has nothing to do with boys or dating or anything, but if it's just something in life, I can always look back and be like, God was faithful in this. He gave me the desires of my heart. And I think that's one of the most important things that you can get out of the story is that for me, it's just a picture of God's kindness and God's faithfulness and that God does want to give you the desires of his heart and of your heart. So my story is pretty much the same as Steele's, with a few differences, I guess. I also heard the godly relationships talk like Steele did. I had been following God. I was kind of a young Christian. I'd probably been going to the Rock about a year, and it was one summer Steele had all this like single people over to his house, you know, to give us the godly relationships talk. And I remember going over there, and I was really skeptical because at that time, especially, I didn't like people telling me how to do things, you know. So I remember being like, "What's this going to be about?" You know. And so we heard the talk, and I also thought it was ridiculous. I was like, "This is stupid," you know. How are you ever supposed to meet anyone, you know? And but really, it never was a conscious decision for me to be like, "Yes, I'm for this Swerver thing." But it was more just like, over the really probably a year after I heard the message, I think God just got my heart more. And then I kind of realized, you know what? I don't want to mess around in that area. I just love God and I want to follow him. You know, and it was just, that's really what it was for me. It wasn't like, yes, I'm all about Swerver. You know, it was more just like, I love God and I want to be a part of this revolution on earth. I want to be a part of, you know, pouring into people's lives and getting people saved. And that's really what it was. And then I think that was probably a process of a year after me hearing the message that I probably, my friends and I, my roommates and I were kind of sitting around one day and we were like, I kind of think that godly relationships thing is a good idea, you know, and we were all kind of like, yeah, it actually sort of makes sense. So it was really just a process of God getting my heart and getting my focus off of like, you know, checking guys out and wondering who I was going to marry, and on to just the work that he had for me at that time as a single person. I wrote notes. So I guess there was probably like another year where I just kind of was running hard for God, and I had kind of subconsciously decided that I wasn't going to date, and I wasn't going to, you know, really focus on guys at all. I'd kind of given that part of my life and my future and my heart to God. And probably about a year later, I was actually going through a really hard time spiritually. God was just teaching me a lot about my identity and just, I don't know, it was just a hard time. And in that, all I wanted was God. I was just really hungry for God. I was just at this point in my life where I was really, really focusing on my relationship with God. And kind of like with Steele, with me, it kind of just came out of nowhere that I was attracted to Steele. I think we were practicing for some, because we do worship together, and we were practicing for some Christmas thing, and I remember being like really excited to see him. And then I remember being freaked out by that and being like, why do I care? You know, what do I care about seeing Steele? Because he was just always sort of this guy. Like I was actually, at that time, roommates with his older sister, and I had been really good friends with her. That's how I knew Steele. And so he was just sort of my friend's brother, you know. But then, and I did music with him, but that was really it. And I just remember being kind of excited about seeing Steele that night, and then that really freaked me out, and I was like, no, I don't want to date, especially Steele. I don't want it to be Steele. And I was like, God, what are you doing? That came out wrong. But it just seemed really weird, because at that time, The Rock, we're from Salt Lake, The Rock in Salt Lake was really small, and especially like the single 20-somethings was a really, really tight group of people, so it was really weird that any of us would be attracted to each other, I think, because it was just like, I don't know, it was just a tight group of friends, and that's always weird when those kinds of things come up, and so I was all freaked out about it, and I didn't want to tell anyone because I thought that that made it, you know, more real, so I waited. I think that was like a Friday night where I was like, oh crap, I think I like steel, what is this, what does it all mean, you know, and so I think it was like later that weekend, I told Paige, his sister, we were driving, and I was like, I think I like steel. And she was like, I'm glad you're finally admitting it. And so I guess apparently she thought I liked him already, but a lot of people said that. I don't really know why. I guess, I don't know. So I was like, you knew? And she was like, yes, I've always known that you guys would end up liking each other. And I was like, whoa, you know, like, why are you, I thought she was like planning my life for me or something, but she kind of thought that I liked him, I guess. And really, for the next few months, it sounds kind of weird, but I really didn't want to like steel, not because it was steel, but just, I didn't want to have that kind of distraction in my life because I felt like I just was at a point where I wanted to focus on God. And so I tried to talk myself out of it. And finally, like, after, I think that was in December, and like in January, I still sort of had these feelings for him. And so my roommates were like, well, you should go talk to Mary, Bill's wife. And so I was like, okay. And that really scared me because it seemed more official that I was going to seek counsel, you know, from someone really godly. And so I went to talk to Mary, and I don't know if she remembers this, but I remember being like, well, I think I like steel, but I don't know for sure, you know. And I was very like, I maybe sort of have a few feelings for him sometime, you know, that's like how it came out. And she was like, okay, you know, and she just told me kind of what we've all been saying, just keep on praying about it. Pray that the feelings would go away, which is a really weird prayer. But really, just like Steele said, if the feelings aren't from God, you don't want them because you want what God wants. And so that made sense to me. And she gave me some really good verses. And so I just kind of took her advice, and I, for the next 6 months, just kept on praying that the feelings would go away. And it was really like a 6 month period where, I think I'm a little more indecisive than Steele. So I think I didn't know for sure what it all meant, but really after 6 months, I remember being like, I'm in love with this person. I'm in love with this person that I hardly know. And I don't even know what that means. But I just remember that I did. I was in love with him. I had watched him just continue to grow and follow God and make these changes in his life that were attractive to me because he loved God. And he loved God first, and I could tell that by his life. And so then I remember it was about a year. Everything was always has to be official for me. So I remember I told my roommates that I was in love with them, and they're like, we figured. And I was like, of course you did, you know. So, but it was a big deal for me to say that because I'd never been in love. I never knew what that meant, but I knew I was in love with him. And I think that, like, I've told that to people before, and people are always like, well, how do you know you're in love, you know, and they're kind of defensive. But it's like, God doesn't keep that kind of thing secret from you. I think that's important for you guys to know, that if you're really seeking God in this area of your life first, God isn't going to, he might make you wait and he might make you wrestle with it, but there will be a time where you know for sure what you feel, that what you feel is real. And whatever, and God uses, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to end up with that person, because God uses those kinds of experiences for his good, no matter what. But there, I just think it's important to know that God doesn't want to keep that kind of thing a secret. And so I remember knowing, okay, I'm in love with this person. And this is really kind of the boring part of the story, because for really a year after that, so it was like a year and a half, I just kept on praying and avoiding steel. But it was cool because God's kind of orchestrated, looking back, God really, there was lots of times where we would end up like, you know, at something together or doing stuff together with music, or when we had the same friends. And it was cool because I got to know him. It's not like we didn't talk to each other, because we did, but I really, God orchestrated it so that I could get to know him and we could get to know each other. So it was cool, but it was really hard. There would be some days where I just I was so in love with him, I just couldn't go. And I knew he was going to be somewhere. I just couldn't go. I just couldn't be around him because I knew it wasn't the right time. And I was like, God, what are you doing? I just want to talk to him. I just want to tell him I love him. Like, it was coming out of me. It was really hard. Like Steele said, it was the hardest. It was the worst year ever. It was like, this is, you know, it's a romantic story and all, but it was horrible. It was like a horrible time. Just waiting and praying and being like, God, what are you doing? When? You know, and for me, I didn't want to initiate. And I think that that's kind of how God would want it to. Like, I think had it gotten to the point where I really couldn't move on in my walk with God, unless I told Steele, I probably would have told him. But I was kind of waiting on God to show me through Steele or through Steele liking someone else. That's kind of where I was. So I really was waiting a lot. There's a lot of good psalms on waiting, by the way. So, but then like Steele said, he called me that day and it was June of like 04, I think. He called me and out of nowhere, I was not expecting him to call me. And he was like, do you want to get coffee? And I was like, okay, you know. And once he called me, I kind of had a hunch, okay, this is it, you know. It was really, so that whole day, I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. God is giving me what I want. And it totally freaked me out, but I was excited. And we talked and we told each other we loved each other. And really, it was so cool because we started dating and instantly we were just best friends. Like God, and you know, we didn't know each other, but we instantly connected and instantly like had so much to talk about and we're like making each other laugh. And now we've been married for about a year and a half. So we dated for a year and then we got married like almost to the day that we started dating. And now we've been married for a year and a half. And I just think like I just think it's worth the wait. Like, I always had really good friends, and I never thought that I could even love someone more than I've loved my friends. But I love Steele more than I ever thought I could. And I know you guys have heard that all the time, but it's so worth waiting because there's no one else I'd rather be with than Steele, and there's nothing else I'd rather do than hang out with him and just serve with him. And God uses you together as a couple. It's so amazing. Your circle of influence like doubles and even quadruples when you're both focused on God and he uses you together. And so, I guess that's the end of our story. So I guess we're doing a question and answer thing now. Okay.
Pull that out.
Yes, yes, questions. Yes.
How are you supposed to tell a girl, like, if she doesn't like you, like, I
cared about you for 2 years. I prayed about this. You know, I did all this thing. That's just too much pressure. And then, like, she doesn't know what to say. Maybe she would ignore you for almost, like, 6 months, not even talk to you. And she won't even tell you an honest answer because maybe she cares about someone else.
Right.
Isn't this kind of unfair to say, like, this is the only way to do this? Because it's been working out for a few people and not everyone, because this doesn't work for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. A lot of thoughts in the question. The question is, what if somebody, a guy liked, what if two guys liked the same girl and they prayed, they kind of followed this model and prayed about it, and they don't even talk to each other, invest a lot of emotional effort and prayer, and what if the girl, you know, there's a lot of what ifs. I mean, it's a scenario that you could paint, and the question really comes down to, isn't that unfair? Because it's only worked for a few people. Well, first of all, it hasn't just worked for a few people. It's worked for a lot of people.
Overall, because think about it, even non-Christians, you know, this is right. Even to non-Christians.
Yeah, certainly.
And seriously, like, my parents didn't get together this way.
Right.
Like, you know, to say this is the best way to go at this, I think it's just wrong to say, because there's no best way. If it was the best way, it would work 100% of the time. It doesn't work 100% of the time.
Yeah. So he's saying, to say it's the best way, and honestly, I'm not sure if I said it was the best way. I don't want to mince words with you. I said it's a different way. I think it's a better way than what the classic did. In one sense, it's like you choose your poison then. So what is the answer? If it's not this way, then what do you choose? You choose to buddy up, to pair up. And you can do that. I said that. I said dating is not a sin. And I know a lot of people have gotten married by dating and being pure. We have people in our church that are doing it. And that's great. And we bless that. We know people that do that. When you walk into our church, we don't make you sign a covenant and say, I will never date somebody. If you're dating somebody, you need to break up before you can be part of our church. We don't do that. It's not legalistic. The point is that we are trying to raise the bar, I think, is the point, in relationships. Now, if you do it this way, that's fine. You could try to do it this way. Or what I'm saying is whatever you do, just make sure you're pure. I think that's what Steele and I are trying to say is, and Kim and my wife, just be pure in what you do, the way you do it. Now, the way God has you do it could be different than, and it will be different than the way He did it with us. But is it pure? Is your relationship honoring to God, the way that you are interacting with that person of the opposite sex? In this area, the Bible is pretty clear that the bar is pretty high, wouldn't you agree? If you listen to the message, the verses are pretty high on being pure. That's all I'm saying. Now, the way it works out practically, I'm not sure how it would work out for you. And I wouldn't condemn if you're pure and you're pursuing God and you're pursuing counsel and you're saying, God, I just want to honor you, then God can bless that and God will bless that. This isn't the best way. This isn't the only way. This is a way that has worked for a lot of people. In a sense, it's just raising the bar and being accountable in our relationships because our hormones are raging, our desires, our flesh is strong, is it not? Our flesh is strong, especially in this area, is it not? Aren't we warned over and over and over to be really careful in this area? So that's our appeal when it comes down to it, is simply be pure. Whatever route you choose, however you want, you believe God's leading you in a relationship with a guy or girl, whether it's dating or the swerver model or whatever model it is, just be pure. Now, to the question of is it fair or not, you pray for a girl for 2 years and she turns you down flat. Is it fair? Well, to say it's unfair, really, it'd be shaking our fists at God and saying, it's not fair. When that question is, God's not fair to me. That's not fair. I would say, I think that you probably learned a few things in that situation. And we don't know everything. If you try to be pure and for 2 years you pray about a guy or a girl and they turn you down flat, that is a sad thing for sure. Sadder for you than for anybody. But if you are sincerely pursuing God, there's nowhere in the Bible that says that you're going to get everything you want. Bible actually says it's good for a young man to wait in Ecclesiastes, to wait, to wait, to wait, to wait, to wait. Why? Because it builds our character. So I say there's value in it. I don't think it's a waste of time. I don't think it's unfair. I think anytime we trust God doesn't mean, you know, there's people that trust God for their sickness and they die or they get sicker. Is that unfair? I think there's things that we can learn. It's character building. If we're trusting, I don't think it's ever a waste of time to trust God. I think that's what Steele is and and trying to emphasize again, it's a matter of trusting God in this relationship. And it's hard. And I apologize if I made it sound like this is the only way, but I will be very, very strong on the purity issue. And I don't think there's many people, and there's not many churches that are preaching purity the way they should and being very strong on that. So I come across very legalistic on the purity side. And I think I've got scriptures to back me up, but I don't want that to be confused with this is the only way. I'm just pushing whatever you do, be pure. And God will work it out with whatever way that He has you do it. Okay? Any other questions? Or do you have a thought on that?
I just have a quick thought on that, and it maybe won't pertain entirely to it. There's a guy, a brother who came up to me who heard this Swerver story last year. And bless his heart, because he came up and my heart kind of broke for him, because there's a lot of part of this story we don't really have time to talk about, and that's the struggle. But this guy came up to me and he said, Steele, he goes, you know, I've been attracted to this girl now for about 6 months. And he said, and I really want to love God. And he said, and I'm under the authority of my pastor. And he said, and she's in my small group. And I'm really excited when I see her. And when I talk to her, I really like talking to her. And he was looking at me like I was going to condemn him. And I said, well, that's great. He said, well, I feel like I'm doing something wrong. I said, oh, brother, what? You're not doing anything wrong. He said, well, I've talked to my pastor, and he said that he thinks it's a good thing just to continue to treat her with purity. I said, oh, brother, that's exactly what you should do. Just because you have those feelings doesn't mean you're wrong. And, you know, I think Bill is right. It's going to look different for everybody. The point of it is, the basis of it is to be God-honoring with those emotions. I think the world would have a knee-jerk situation where they might go and go out and just start hooking up right away. But that process of waiting, and brother, I just got to tell you, I'm so sorry that happened to you. Brother, I'm sorry. I mean, that's so hard. I think that the whole thing is, I couldn't look at that guy today and say, that you were wrong because you were excited to see that gal. That's never the point. Never to be a legalistic situation. The point is to be God honoring in your emotions and God honoring with your attractions. I think there was more questions. Go ahead.
How specifically would you seek accountability in the stage in which you are before the asking out, but after the feeling attracted to a person? What would you tell your smoking life group to hold you accountable? Because in terms of showing favoritism, because sometimes people can be blinded to if they're actually showing favoritism. The problem is that people in life group might not even recognize that you are in need of accountability. What do you tell them to keep you accountable in?
So is your question, what would you do to let your life group know how to keep you accountable? Or how do you keep your life group accountable?
No, the first one.
Okay. So, the first one. So the question is, how do you tell your life group or your small group to keep you accountable, to keep you from sharing favoritism? And the answer to that is, I think it could be different. For me, what I would say, if there was a guy who came up to me and he was in my small group and he said, I'm attracted to this gal, I would tell him, you know, be careful who you tell. Because, you know, I would, if it were you, brother, and you had an attraction towards a gal, I wouldn't necessarily tell everybody in your small group that you're attracted to that gal and to have them keep you accountable. What I might do is go to a couple of guys that you feel like have a spiritual authority in your life, a pastor or a mentor, and I'd go to them and I'd say, listen, I've got these feelings of attraction towards this girl. Will you please keep me accountable? I will be honest with you. If you look into my life, will you look into my life? And that's what I did with Bill. And I still do that kind of thing with guys today in other areas of my life. I don't tell everybody to keep me accountable. I tell the people that are in my life and have authority in my life, would you please keep me accountable? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions?
Think it and you can desire that, but it's really to actually live that out, because you catch thoughts that you don't even realize are happening. So
the question was, how do you practically, even before you like a guy, how do you practically focus on God and not on the temptation of guys? That's really hard. It was not like, it's easy. I think practically, this kind of sounds weird, but I think what I did is I busied myself of the things of the Lord. Like, I met meeting with women and, working on like a church plant or just digging into the Bible. And, of course those temptations are going to be there, but it's just like anything. If you're like a flirty person and it's a real temptation for you to be like a flirt with guys or whatever, have like someone that keeps you accountable, or have promises that you can replace your thoughts with. A lot of times with girls, I think that temptation kind of goes on in your head. Like, what would it be like with this boy? And you can kind of go there in your mind. And I think, it's hard. It's a discipline for sure. Finding verses that you can, like, I used to carry verses around in my back pocket and just be like, if my mind was, more for me, it was more when I liked steel, but even before that, it's a temptation just to think about the possibility of, that kind of relationship. And I think, just to have verses that maybe you can replace those kinds of thoughts with. And I think, it's important to know that it's not bad to like a boy. I mean, it's good, but I think it just, you got to get a hold of those thoughts, because your heart is just like out of control. Your heart is very deceptive. And I think that, you don't need to feel guilty if you like a boy. It's good to like a boy, or even to like the idea of liking a boy, but just to like have a hold on that, I think, is really, really smart. So I guess those are some, did that answer your question? Okay. Any more questions? Yes.
I have a friend she's married now, but when they were married, when they were attracted to each other and trying to kill each other, she was really led to just not say anything about it to anyone. And I was just wondering if you, what your guys' thoughts on the balance between talking about it and
Yeah. Her question was, this might be more of a girl question, but just like, or maybe it's a guy question, but like, what's the balance when you are attracted to someone of talking about it and who to tell and versus not talking about it? I think for me, I told my roommates and I told Mary, and that was really it. I told people that I respected and that were in my life and that I looked up to. I think it just depends on your situation. I think looking back for me, there was probably a few other girls I should have told, just because we were all so close. It hit them out of nowhere once we started dating, and that was really weird, So I think it just depends. But I think you need to be careful, especially girls, that like you're not just telling people so that you have someone to talk about it with, because that was hard for me. Like, I told one of my friends back home that didn't really know Steel, and so I'd email her, and when I first started liking Steel, and I'd be like, these are the things I like about Steel, and I would just like email her and stuff. And that's like not good on your heart, because then you just get thinking about it, and then you're just like all good and thinking about what you don't need to be thinking about. So I think that it's just kind of a balance. Definitely tell people that are around you and that are close to you, but don't just tell people so that, certainly don't tell people that can't handle that kind of information, that can't keep it private, because I think it should be private, because it's not fair for everyone to know. It's not fair for that person to find out. So do you have any
thoughts? Just a quick thought on that too is in Proverbs it talks about just above all else guard your heart. And that's what Kim was talking about. It's one thing to go to tell the people of authority in your life so that you have accountability, but if you were to sit around and daydream, you're really not guarding your heart that much. It's good to guard your heart, protect your heart. That's what it says in Proverbs. Guard your heart. If you were to sit around and email and be like, "This boy is so dreamy," and The next thing you know, the danger of that, again, is that the danger of that is that you're giving your heart away before it's time. Does that make sense? So it's good to wait. That's what it says in Song of Solomon. Do not awaken love until it's proper time. Because there's going to come a time where, as a man, you're going to want to protect and provide and love and cherish your wife, and there's going to be a right time for that. And as a lady, there's going to be a time to go, I just love my husband, I respond to that, and you give your heart away at the right time. But until then, you want to guard your heart. So it's good to think about those things in terms of, am I telling this so I can daydream and ride away on my steed with this knight in shining armor or whatever? Or, you know, are you telling him so you could be, you know, protected? Any other questions?
How did you guys know that each other was? Like, did it like click or was it like a gradual?
I put on a pair of magic pants. So the question was, is how did you guys know that you were the one? The answer to that is, at first I didn't know. At first it was just an attraction. And like Kim said, she waited a while to tell, you know, to really make that official in her mind that she loved me. And for me, it was the same kind of thing. I was attracted to her. I had made my mind up that I wanted to be a godly man. And, at first I didn't know. And during that time of waiting on God and following God and seeking God and praying and waiting, you know, there were times where my heart, I would be like, I'm 100% sure. And then other days I'd be like, am I really that sure? Towards the end, I really knew it was her because I knew that I was consumed with her. I mean, and it wasn't like just infatuation. It was, God, I've given you time. Again, that's the principle. I've given you time to tell me no. I've given you time to make this clear. And so by the end of it, it was like a bubbling 10. You know, it was like 10. Kim. Everywhere I went, I prayed. My journals were just filled with Kim. It was crazy. And I knew that she was the one. A question that a lot of people have is, how did you know it was time? How did you know it was time to approach that gal? How did you know it was time to approach them and tell them that you were attracted to them? And I'm going to answer that, even though you didn't ask it. I knew it was time, or I knew she was the one, because it had come clear to me that I could not move in faith with God anymore. Because it was faith for me to wait for Kim. Okay? It was faith for me to wait to go, I've got to wait for my spouse. That took faith. But then pretty soon, it was way easier to wait. Pretty soon it was like, I'd rather just stay here in the corner. I'd rather just have a love affair with my love. It didn't take any faith to do that pretty soon. And the only step I could take with God was to go, God, I don't want to go out there. And in faith, I had to go. Does that make sense? So at first it took faith to kind of pull in the reins. And then later, after following God, it took faith to move towards her. I was consumed with her. My thoughts were with her. And to grow in God and to grow in faith, I had to make that step. Yeah, that's a good question. So the question was, how did you communicate with Kim? How did I communicate, or how do you communicate with somebody without crossing that line? And I think that looks different for everybody. I think the principle behind it is to guard your heart. And for guys, listen, guard her heart. You understand? If you're a guy and you are following God, you guard her. You do not unlock her heart. So I could say, hi Kim, how are you today? When I was in love with her, or maybe she was in love with me. How are you? I hope you had a good day. And enjoy that time that God had provided. We got a van ride together, or we sat down together and we happened to be next to each other. And it was dialogue. Regular, you're my sister, dialogue. In my heart it was But at that time, it was okay, she's my sister. I gotta be careful of her. It's not about me. It's about her. And so when I talked to her, it was, did you have a good day? I took advantage of that wink wink from God, okay, when they came, where it was like, I get to sit next to her. I didn't manipulate that. She's sitting next to me. I'm going to talk to her. But it wasn't, you look pretty good in those jeans. You know? Or I didn't flirt. I didn't ask her two personal things. Does that make sense? I didn't try to unlock her heart. It's not fair to her. Do you see what I mean? It wasn't time yet. And so the conversations that you have, and ladies, don't do that to the men. If you're attracted to a boy, guard him. Protect him. Because he wants to defend you. Okay? He's made that way. He's made that way to provide and to protect and to win and to lead. God made him that way. If you're attracted to him, protect that side of him. Okay? All right. What else? Yeah, that's a tough one. I think because it's different for each person. We have to be careful not to second guess every thought of our heart. Okay? Because if you're anything like me, brother, I was crazy. I was second guessing every thought of my heart. Okay? Did I stand too close? Did I go over there? Should I not? And then I punished myself. I would have punished myself. I should have done that. And pretty soon it's like a crazy person. You know what I mean? Okay. But it's important to go, look, don't unlock her heart, okay? It's one thing to say, you know, and I don't know what kind of guy, I think God holds each man accountable. Thank God for Romans. That's what it says. We all stand accountable before God on our own. So what may look like manipulating a situation to you looks different to me. But to me, manipulating a situation looks like I'm going over here with the entire intention of just making myself look good or making myself look like Romeo so that I can hopefully right now, right here, hook up. Okay? Or pretty soon, hook up. It's another thing entirely if you're kind of going, if you're asking the questions, am I being favor, am I showing favoritism? Am I not being godly? Chances are, brother, you might be okay. Because you're asking yourself those questions. Does that make sense? Am I showing favoritism right now? Oh, man, I just want to go talk to her. You have to walk in faith in that, but if you're going over there to say, man, I can't wait to show how cool I am, or I can't wait to go over there and hopefully she'll sit next to me at Faith Walkers or whatever, you know, it's like, you don't want to do that. You see what I mean? Don't second guess your thoughts, but at the same time, you know, does that make sense? Does that make sense to you? Okay. Hopefully that answered. Do you have some thoughts?
That's a really good question. I just wanted to kind of echo what Steele was saying. It's really hard because once you kind of made that decision, then you really don't, you want to follow God so bad, and you're just like, you start to think that every time you want to talk to that person, it's going to be wrong, you know, and it's just not. You have to, there's just a balance, and sometimes you are going to mess up, and you're going to totally have manipulated, you know, some situations, so you just happen to be sitting by that person, and you're totally being selfish, and that's going to probably happen sometimes. It did with me, but then other times, you're just going to end up next to that person, and that's okay, you know. Jesus Christ lives inside of you, and I think that, like, you kind of just have to trust that and just kind of trust, be like, God, you know, I don't know, I just give you today, and I give you the situations today, and it's just kind of, I don't know, it's a struggle for sure, and sometimes you're going to hit it, and sometimes you're going to miss it, and I don't know.
I would say one other important factor would be just godly counsel when it's something like this, because when you're in this situation, you're it's easy to get blinded. Your passions, your hormones, everything's raging, and if you're in love with somebody, it's hard to make always good decisions, and just have somebody in your life that understands where you're at. Again, we're not talking legalism, but just have somebody, like Steele would often just call me and say, hey, I'm going to be in this situation, or we'd sit for coffee and he'd say, this is what happened this week, and I'm worried about this situation, what do you think? He'd just bounce it off me. And I did the same thing when I was in love with Mary. I would sit with John and Carol Meyer, and he would just ask me, how's my week going? How's things going? It was always good to have Carol because she was the compassionate one, and John was a little harder on me. But Carol would say, he never eats when he comes over here, just pushes his food around. John, lay off him a little bit, you know. And But just have somebody that you could bounce it off of. Just a trusted friend. Say, hey, they know the situation. And you could just call them if you're wondering. You don't want to second guess yourself all the time. But if there's a situation that you know you're going to get into, call them up and say, hey, do you think this is cool? I know my heart. You know me. What do you think? And it's just a check on. And that's true with everything. It's good to bounce things out. I don't make a move, honestly, church-wise or big issues that I consider big without calling John Meyer or Rick Whitney or somebody saying, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. Am I out to lunch here? Maybe I'm not seeing something. So, you know, abundance of counselors, victory. I know it's time to go. And if you want to hang around and talk, since there's no more seminars, feel free to do that. But I officially want to dismiss you. If you need to go do something, that's fine. I don't want to make you feel like you've got to stay here. But if you have other questions, we'd be glad to stay here and answer any more questions. Again,